So don't expect too much. I didn't prepare basically anything, but I noted that there would be about 17 items that I would like to talk about, 17 topics. If I've been given 50 minutes or so, that makes about 3 minutes per topic. On the other hand, since I'm around, since I will be only superficial on a number of things, please contact me anytime in case during my visit, in case I can be of any help. The first item is, I think, a must, although it's a kind of very old subject.
Oops. Is the mic on? Are you being recorded?
I'm being recorded, I think. This goes back to a few centuries ago. The idea is to consider rotating fluids and discuss the connection between the shape and the amount of rotation or angular momentum that is available for these self-gravitating fluids. The key point to be aware of is that there is a one-to-one correspondence between flattening and angular momentum in some dimensionless form. It goes like this. But the correspondence is not one-to-one for the omega square hat. Where rho is the density of the rotating fluid. There is a maximum rotation speed. What was found long ago is that there is a triaxial sequence of equilibria that is available at high values of angular momentum, even though the system by itself, the problem, seems to be axially symmetric. So triaxial figures of equilibrium are available. Now, this is an old story, and I think one nice point of this list of items is that actually each of them is not a closed subject. It is even here, that is the classical theory of rotating fluids, is an open problem to me in many respects. For example, here I will make a statement, let's see if Orten would agree, that in principle, if you exploit the complete generality of the solutions that involve not only solid body rotation but also vorticity for fluids, you have complicated figures of equilibrium studied by Riemann and others, and there is no proof that the elliptical galaxy that we see in the skies cannot be matched by some of these fancy Riemann ellipsoids in terms of their kinematical properties. I wouldn't care about working on this subject because it's academic, but still, in principle, it would be an open problem. Three minutes have gone, so I go to the second item, relaxation times. Elliptical galaxies are not fluids, are made primarily, they are to be considered as stellar systems. As such, one can study the relaxation times, that is, with respect to a number of processes like momentum transport and various directions, energy transport, and so on, to study how long it takes for the system to relax. And in practice, one would like to know, given a star orbiting inside the system, whether that orbit is significantly affected by close encounters or not. Chandrasekhar studied this problem long ago. He came out with formulae to describe how long you have to wait in order to be sure that you have to include the effects of close encounters in the description of orbits. That's the definition of the relaxation times. And he came out with formulae of this type. That I'm sure most of you have seen, that include the relative speed between the star that you're looking at and the stars that are in the field, the number density of stars in the field, the mass of the objects that are involved in the process, so on and so forth. This relaxation time is a local estimate of how collisionality works, in the sense that if you replace this v cube by a velocity dispersion cube, which is a fair way to proceed in a non-rotating system, this quantity and this quantity depend if you are at the center in general or at the periphery of these systems. And so you have a range of values for TD. For example, inside globular clusters, the central part may be collisional with respect to this formula. The outer parts may be collisionless. For elliptical galaxies, these tend to be of the orders of 10 to the 13 years. And so people would say, well, you have to wait too long, and these systems are to be treated as collisionless systems. Another way of formulating the problem is to couple this expression with virial theorem. And the handy expression for the relaxation time in terms of a global estimate is of this form, TD divided by T dynamical, or T crossing for a star crossing the system, is something like this. This is often preferred in articles and discussions, but I would prefer this one because the system is inhomogeneous, the systems we are looking at. In any case, both this formula and this formula are only a very rough estimate of what goes on. Simulations have shown that the classical formulation by Chandrasekhar is not to be relied too much upon. In any case, the estimates given here give so long relaxation times that, as I was saying, elliptical galaxies should be treated as collisionless in a first approximation. If we go on, we go to the third point, which is the description that comes out of this picture that should be favored in order to study the from evolution and dynamics of elliptical galaxies. So the description goes through distribution functions. The equations of stellar dynamics, and the so-called Jeans theorem. So the argument, that the flow of thoughts is the following. Galaxies cannot be treated as fluids because the relaxation times are very long. They are collisionless systems. So how do you treat them? The most natural way to treat these systems is to introduce the distribution function in phase space, which is imagined to be is defined to be a probability function, so that the integral of f over the velocity coordinates would give you the density, for example, of mass as a function of position and time. So the six-dimensional space is velocity coordinates or momenta and physical coordinates. Then from here you have a number of definitions that are relevant to the astronomer. For example, motions can be defined as the velocity field as the average speed associated with this distribution function, and you can go on, define a pressure tensor, and so on and so forth. So the basic description of a collisionless system would be in terms of a distribution function. The equation that the distribution function is supposed to obey is this. Where the H is the one particle Hamiltonian of the system. Per unit mass, it would be written like this. And the potential that is here is not a detailed potential that includes all the discontinuities, the delta functions of the single stars, but it's the mean potential, mean field potential. The symbol Poisson brackets is the standard and the reason to put it in terms of the Hamiltonian formalism is because then you can exploit this framework to do a number of easy calculations that otherwise would be very lengthy to make. In practice, this is telling us that the total number of particles is conserved in the flow along around this six-dimensional space. Now, this is just introduction to the beginning of the tools to the study of the equations of stellar dynamics. The main difficulty with respect to other fields where the same equation can be considered, this in a sense is a kind of Boltzmann equation. The main difficulty is related to the fact that this equation is typically coupled to another equation, which is the equation that defines the mean field. In the case that F represents the stellar system that we are considering, and there is nothing else around, so in the case that the system is fully self-consistent, you have to couple this with no other source for the phi, the potential, and this collisionless Boltzmann equation. So this that apparently would be a linear differential equation in F turns out to define, because of this combination, a highly nonlinear problem. That is the problem of stellar dynamics. If you have dark matter, and F, you would like to reserve it to the description of the stellar system you are studying, then you have to include something here like 4 pi g rho of dark matter. But then you have to have some equations for the dark matter component to deal with. So that opens up a number of issues and parameters if you are constructing models along these lines. So these are the basic tools. And basically, the only thing to remember because of this is that if you are interested in equilibrium configurations, that is in states that are, to a first approximation, time independent, then you can apply what is called the Jeans theorem, which is essentially phrased like this. F cannot be any functions of coordinates in phase space, but that must be a function of the integrals of the motion associated with the potential phi. So in under equilibrium conditions, phi would be phi of x. The time invariance would tell you the energy is conserved. If you assume other symmetries like spherical symmetry or axial symmetry and so on, you may list favorite integrals of the motion here. And to the extent that you construct a function that is positive definite, because it is a probability function, and you use a combination of integrals of the motion, you know automatically that the equilibrium equations, that is the equations of stellar dynamics, the collisionless Boltzmann equation, are satisfied. So F equals ma is okay. And then you have to deal with the rest of your problem. Now, since elliptical galaxies to a first approximation are spherical, you may think that that's the way to go, that is energy and the square of the angular momentum, so that you avoid the problem of claiming that F describes a system if you use the third available integral. You have to claim that some frame of reference is available that lets you know where the z-axis is. Such a frame of reference is not available if you have a round system, and then this is the most general combination that you have to use. Let's see, I'm going too slow. Fourth, Jean's equations. The problem of dealing with the kinetic description that boils down to using all the time functions of integrals of the motions is actually a problem that is judged to be too complicated by many of us. So people prefer to see the equivalent of fluid equations. And how does one go from here to here? Well, it is a simple, rather straightforward thing to show that if you start from the collisionless Boltzmann equation here, and you start taking some moments of this, that is, you integrate in velocity space some powers of the velocity two of alpha and combinations thereof, then you come out with equations that must be true if the zero is on that side. And these equations would involve averages in phase space of F multiplied by V and so on. So you come out with fluid equations. These equations are basically what are known in fluid dynamics. So continuity's equation is the one that you come out with right away. What is usually meant by this is the modification of the hydrostatic equilibrium conditions than the general case when you start from here and go to there. In spherical symmetry, for example, the equilibrium equations, that would be d, p, r, dr, for hydrostatic equilibrium, that would have minus rho d phi dr, with the obvious notation, r is the radius and so on. I'm putting prr because the system has a pressure tensor and has an anisotropic pressure tensor, because the distribution function is depends on more than one integral of the motion. What happens is that this equation, that would be the standard one, is modified by a term. I'm not sure if this sign is correct, and I will check it later, with alpha and alpha is called the anisotropy parameter of the system. This quantity I can take away these averages given the notation I was using here, tells you that in general, for a spherical system, p theta theta and p phi phi are the same, the pressures in the tangential directions, the two tangential directions, are the same, two, and so we can write this as 2 minus 2 pi theta theta pi rr. But in general, you don't know whether p theta theta is equal to p rr. And only isotropic system have this equals to this, and so have alpha equal to 0. So only for isotropic systems, you have the standard hydrostatic equilibrium. The problem with these fluid equations with respect to starting with this is that you introduce in them things that you don't know about. That is, in principle, you have to consider an infinite number of momenta to have the same amount of information that you have in the equations of stellar dynamics I introduced first. So what people do when they use these equations is to add some ad hoc information, or maybe some observational information, about some of the quantities that have that are present there. They make use of the equations, that this equation is certainly to be satisfied for equilibrium conditions. There is one danger. If you insist on using the fluid equations because they are more intuitive, in principle, and everyone states so, in principle you should check that the final solutions for your system can be supported by a physically acceptable distribution function. Since people do not know much about the physics of these systems, they are happy at least with a situation in which the supporting distribution function is at least positive definite. Now, you might think that this is obvious, it always would come out like that. Instead, it's not true. When people try, in some cases, to check whether the solutions coming out from a study based on fluid equations are acceptable, sometimes it happens that there is no positive definite distribution function that allows you to work with. And so you should discard everything away. In my opinion, you should discard everything away in many more other cases, because you would be forced to use distribution functions that can be crazy. So, I think I convinced you that there are two simple equations that we start with that are safe. These are this. And the Poisson equation that can be fully self-consistent or not. Let me write the fully self-consistent version here. The problem is, once the framework is set, how do you proceed to construct models that you would like to apply to galaxies, for example, or to your own theoretical ideas? In my view, there is a simple dichotomy for two different ways of constructing models. One way is to start from raw and give priority to the choice of the density profile. So you may specify a spherical system with an assigned distribution of density, for example, something that matches perfectly the R1 quarter law for elliptical galaxies. And then, in a sense, the Poisson equation, this is rho, you assign the function rho max. Poisson equation is your business to solve. You would be able to obtain the corresponding potential. It's second year freshman physics. Well, freshman would be first year, second year physics. What do you do then? Then you have this equation. And your problem would be to invert, by having assigned the density, to invert this equation to compute or to derive at least one distribution function or a family of distribution functions such that their integral in phase space gives exactly the density that you have specified. It is here that already you find problems in having a solution with positive density in phase space, positive definite distribution functions, for example. And there is a number of ways that you can get around the problem, because, for example, if you take a spherical system, you may like to a spherical system means rho dependent on R, you may argue that the distribution function that you're looking for is isotropic, that is function of energy only. For this, there are inversion formula that are called Abel inversion formula. But who tells you that the system has to be isotropic? No one. It's part of your assumptions. So you can have the wish to study also functions of this type, and so on and so forth. And then you open up an entire jungle of possibilities. Typically, it would be nice to have at least a number of integrals here that match the number of variables in your density. For example, for axisymmetric systems, you have R and Z, and you have energy and JZ. There is a beautiful work done by Chris Hunter and Chang on the inversion in this more general case where you use complex variables, and it's very nice. What is the other way of proceeding? The other way of proceeding to me is more physical, that is more what physicists would like to take. And in fact, when I talk to colleagues doing plasma physics, they always find clumsy this first way, first approach, and they always go immediately into this approach. What would be the second approach? You guess some distribution function, and it's up to you to guess it physically plausible, to have arguments to justify what you're doing, and you guess its form here, or the family of models that you think are well described by this. Then you plug it in here, and then this equation becomes a functional of phi. Because take, for example, this would be v squared divided by 2 plus phi. If you integrate over v, you have a dependence on phi, and so you have something that depends on the function that you don't know yet what it is. Then, by using the integrals of the motion, you know that this is okay. You're left only with Poisson equation, but this is now a non-linear equation in phi, which may be sometimes hard to manage. So you see, as I expected, that the rate of items is not 3 minutes per item, but we'll see what happens. So this is the general setup, theoretical setup. Number 6 point 6 is something that came historically in the mid-70s when people started to be able to measure some kinematics using absorption lines in elliptical galaxies. And the surprise was that taking objects that appear to be flat, at least in the sky they were not round, and doing long slit spectroscopy along the major axis, they found very little sign in many cases of rotation. This idea was quantified by a number of measurements around that time, so let's say 75 on. Not rotations. Sorry. Yeah, sometimes my words come out wrong. But. From this time on, the rotation seemed to have little to do with the shapes of these ellipticals. There are nice plots by Roger Davis and collaborators made in papers that go, let's see, 83 on, where they try to accumulate statistics, that is, cases of this kind. And also they put a warning that the statement is not really this, but only this. And the diagram is something like this. This is like minus 21 magnitude in the blue. And here you have low luminosity, and here you have high luminosity. And the graphs would have a strange axis called log, if I remember, something like V sigma star or something like that, with zero here. And the idea would be to put a data point for each spheroidal system, that is a bulge, elliptical galaxy, and other round systems. And then the luminosity axis is trivial. Here there is modeling involved that goes back to this first point, that's why I mentioned it. So you measure for the elliptical objects you're studying the amount of systematic rotation in some average or well-defined sense with respect to the random motions, what can be called pressure, the sigma, the velocity dispersion here. And you take the ratio of what is observed to what is expected if the system were rotation supported. So if the amount of rotation you see is what should be there because the system is a Maclaurin spheroid, for example, then you will have one or there around, because there is also a problem of these inclination effects that you have to worry about. But then the logarithm of one would be zero, and you will have all the points staying here, and then it would be up to you to decide the scatter, if it is due to the definition, the model, and so on and so forth, the data, and the accuracy of what you're measuring, whatever. The graphs that were shown by Roger Davis and others since 83 are graphs of this kind, where it's full of data points down here with very little rotation with respect to the expected rotation. But this statement, note the large scatter and the spread, applies only for the bright objects. The threshold, minus 21, at that time was based on H naught equals 50, so you should, if you like the precise number, you should just revise a little bit what I just sketched.
But there are no points at faint luminosity, or there are some?
There are points, but all clustered around the zero, which would be telling us that apparently they might even be classical spheroids, structurally speaking. So this brought a lot of excitement in the field, because the standard boring picture of having the flattening of a stellar system similar to the flattening of the Earth because of rotation was shaken and destroyed as a picture, and one would have to find a way to explain non-spherical shapes without rotation. And here the relaxation time business helps a lot, and all this technical development helps a lot, because when you don't have collisionality, you don't have a necessarily a scalar pressure, you don't have an isotropic velocity dispersion, but you can have velocity dispersion that is higher in one direction and smaller in another direction, and correspondingly you can have shapes that are different because the gradient of the potential, the gravity, is balanced in different ways according to the direction you are taking. Seven. So around that time, let's say 75-80, great excitement in the field, and the excitement, partly because of this dichotomy, went into two different directions. One direction was mainly to study ways of constructing self-consistent models able to tell you to describe shapes, that is, non-spherical systems. So the interest was in triaxiality, in departures from spherical system symmetry. The other line of work was instead making use of the same equations and taking advantage of the collisionless nature of these systems, but was focusing on another aspect of the field that is apparently important, that is that apparently the surface brightness distribution of elliptical galaxies are well described by what is called the R1 quarter law. And so a question is, how come you have such a universality if you think that such a law is indeed universal? What I mean by this is that if I take I as being the surface brightness, the R1 quarter law states the following with n equal 4. I'm writing it with an n because more recently many people like to broaden a bit the picture to what are called Sursich profiles. And the definition of Re is the definition of the effective radius, the radius that encloses half of the total luminosity of the galaxy. And if you insist on this definition for Re, you have to put a coefficient that depends on the number n in your equation. For example, in for n equal 4, it is 7.67. I think it's this is due to Luca Ciotti, this expansion. It's an asymptotic expansion, valid for n down to 1, to unity. It's an asymptotic expansion. It's not a Taylor. For, in principle, it's for large n, but it gives you a part over 1,000 down to n equal to 1, as asymptotic expansions do sometimes. That's right. Yes. So you, it's a very exciting topic. besides the interest in this, the point is that apparently most elliptical galaxies most elliptical galaxies appear to follow this R1/4 law. Now, this claim again is biased in the direction of bright ellipticals. So, but everything that I'm going to say will be biased in favor of bright ellipticals. So, what is certainly true is that we would like to have an idea why this happens. So, the two lines of work have focused on two different issues: shapes and R1/4 law. And I think here we are stuck. Although there is beautiful work done, I mean, it is something that it's incredibly detailed and technically perfect. But we are stuck for one reason: that the best we can do is through a class of potentials that are the so-called Stekel potentials. These Stekel potentials are essential to do the job because they are separable and they have the number of integrals of the motion to go through all the requirements you need. And if you are out of those, you are in a mess. You don't know what to do. Unfortunately, with the Stekel potentials, you have always something that has a broad core. You never get to something that look like the luminosity profiles of elliptical galaxies if you convert your dynamical profiles with a constant mass to light ratio. There is an additional ironic fact about the Stekel potentials. If you think about observationally what is the best evidence for triaxiality, in the 80s it was identified to be the twist of isophotes. You have ellipticals that, if you draw the isophotes, they twist, their major axis turn around. And if you take an axis symmetric system, you project it in the sky, in spite of all the directions you can do the job, it would never have twisting of isophotes. So, happily, some people were clever to make these triaxial systems, but I think Marijn Franks showed that these Stekel potentials do not have a twisting of isophotes. So it's really, you are stuck. There are other things that you can do numerically with n-body simulations. There is a prescription that was started with Martin Schwarzschild that I won't talk about, but would give more food for thought in this direction. But
you know the kinematic misalignment that's in the Stekel as well, right? So that's still okay.
Probably, yes. I have to check. Let me see what I have in my list of items. 8. The way I'm following the list goes more under suggestions of people who try to handle this as their issue. Why should the surface brightness profile of elliptical galaxies have this universal character? Now, the questions that you may raise is whether distribution functions or should the distribution function be arbitrary? By this I mean that when we talk about distribution function is a mathematical concept, but more practically, can you collect the orbits at your own, in your own way and be happy with it? Do you think that galaxies really are a collection of orbits at random, in a sense, or not rather than random, in an arbitrary fashion? Or would there be rules that you have to follow, at least approximately, in the distribution of orbits? If there are rules, then you cannot put in an arbitrary distribution function. And then you will have some consequences and something would go on in a certain way rather than in an infinite number of ways. For example, if you take the concept borrowed from statistical mechanics that the system has relaxed and is in thermal equilibrium, then there would be a strong argument in favor of something like this. With a constant. And when in other research areas people go into this, they often argue that the system must be that way because it has relaxed. And to do this, the help comes from collisionality. Now, here we don't have collisionality, so we cannot go straight in that direction. But many phenomena in physics, collective phenomena, tend to replace what collisions do. That's something that plasma physics has taught in a number of with a number of examples. So this could be a starting point, and this is would lead to the isothermal sphere. That is, if you take this, replace and you stay within spherical symmetry and you put in the Poisson equation, you come out with the isothermal sphere that has the well-known problem of having an infinite mass. That is, you will have rho that goes like 1 over r squared at infinity. That's a nuisance, but that's also something quite exciting because halos appear to do something like that. And you can have the regular isothermal sphere or you can have the singular isothermal sphere. I prefer the regular isothermal sphere because there is no reason to claim that the solution should be singular. So typically this solution is something like this. And then asymptotically it goes like 1 over r squared. The singular isothermal sphere is exactly 1 over r squared and would go like this. In stellar dynamics, there are ways to solve this problem, that the problem of infinite mass, for systems that are not in vacuum. For example, globular clusters. For these, this type of solution is modified into another class of models that is physically justified. That is, the distribution function is given first on physical arguments, and then the models are calculated afterwards. And these are called King models. Can we do anything of help, not for globular clusters, but for elliptical galaxies? King models, after all, rely a lot on the collisionality that these small stellar systems have and have been accumulating in their past history. What has been done in the context of galactic dynamics is to go back to ideas presented by Donald Lyndon Bell long ago. It is the idea of violent relaxation. A violent relaxation is a way to relax without having collisions, and apparently is a paradoxical process, but can be exemplified in a number of ways. The best way that can be done and can be seen is what Tjirt van Alvada did some quarter of a century ago, 1982. Prepared first a collisionless code that was certified to a certain accuracy to be collisionless, that is to represent a collisionless Boltzmann equation. Took a cloud of stars, that is an initial conditions for its code, that would be representative of a system out of equilibrium, a spherical cloud, quasi-spherical cloud with some clumps, but not perfectly spherical, that's a key point, but round. Out of equilibrium means that the stars of this cloud have little kinetic energy to stay like that. This whole system will be collapsing. He follows that in the simulation, and he finds that in a couple of crossing times, the system does relax, as Donna Lindenbell, out of his imagination, had thought in 67 or so. And some of the findings by Chetvanabada follow that scheme that Donna Lindenbell had, but the details were surprising. Something that is related to the function alpha of R that I was talking about is that his products, his quasi-equilibrium products, always follows this trend. This is 2, this is 1, this is the half mass radius, and alpha, I remind you, is 2 minus v squared theta theta plus v squared phi phi. So isotropic alpha equals 0 in the central half of the galaxy and radially anisotropic in the outer parts. This is something that Donna Lindenbell had guessed. He couldn't tell exactly where the turnover radius would be, but the asymptotic trends, relaxation and radial pressure outside was there. The surprise was that if you look at these products of the simulations and you look at them as an observer would do, that is, you convert the density distribution in a surface brightness distribution by a constant mass to latitude ratio, you have the R1 quarter law, but at an extremely good accuracy, like 0.1 magnitudes. So from here on, given these encouraging starts, one can try to produce physically justified models.
I think this will depend very much on the initial conditions, right? Because then, you know, why is exactly, you know, that transition will change at
yes.
one as a half
yes.
mass?
That's a perfect question. That is, something like this was tried also for a collisional collapse picture by Richard Larson. And the interesting point that I forgot to mention, thanks for your question, is that while Vanalbada has it generically for a variety of initial conditions, and actually his simulations, we ran them last year for other purposes, and it always comes like that. For Richard Larson, you had to really pick the right proper condition in order to come down to the R1 quarter law. So what I won't describe, but is that starting from here, you can argue on a form of F that is consistent with a picture of collapse, collisionless collapse. And the nice thing is that you can a priori write, as you write the isothermal sphere, you write a form for F, and you see what it comes out. And the nice thing is that we did with Michele Trenti, who is a postdoc at TSCI, last year in his PhD thesis. It is possible to stay with the generic concordance with the R1 quarter law and so on. They look like the observed ellipticals, these objects. But also we were able to match the products of collisionless collapse, that is, model to the numerical experiments, over density of the density profile within 10% over 9 orders of magnitude in density. So it's telling us that at least physically speaking, there is a good grasp, maybe a simple piece of physics, but it has been taken. And so this, you may call them equivalent of King models, but suited to incorporate the collisionless collapse picture, violent relaxation, and that stuff. Now, if you note, there would be the most luminous part of the galaxy that is quasi-isotropic. And only the outer part would be anisotropic and biased in the radial direction. So you may say, this is the kind of prediction. Can we test this prediction? our galaxy is behaving like this, forget about the simulations that may be not what nature does. And so here comes the 11th point. I'm running out of time, and so I will leave 4 or 5 points out on my list. But I think at least the 11th point is going to where we are heading to, that is the problem of dark matter. The simulations by Chirt van Albada and these concepts were without a dark halo. So it's a cloud of stars and nothing else. Why should we worry about dark matter? How could we include dark matter in this description? Well, it was well known by Tom Rhee and many others in the field. I think this is 83, probably. That a puzzle that is provided by elliptical galaxies can have two different solutions. The puzzle is the following. Elliptical galaxies appear all to have this. If there are questions on it, I can try to be more careful about the statement, but we would say the Aaron-Quater law works. But it is well known that the dispersion velocity profiles of galaxies is not universal. Sometimes it's like this, sometimes like this, and then I'm drawing lines, but you have to think about data points. So how do you reconcile a variety of slopes in the velocity dispersion profiles with a single frozen law for the light distribution? If we had the courage to say, oh, there are no dark halos around, we would be stuck, because here you start with F, you have something that beautifully matches the Aaron-Quater law, and the velocity dispersion profile is one of these profiles, and you don't have leverage to change it. It's what it is. Either it works or it does not. For NGC 3379, it does work beautifully. And then Magda and so on will tell us about how to improve beyond 1RE, but you can check. It works beautifully. And it's done, you don't have free parameter. It's done because probably NGC 3379 seems to be with little dark matter. Now, that case appears to stay at the low, the high slope level, that is, we are down here. It is known that there is a variety of possibilities. Tonry noted that you can accommodate for these, that you can interpret these different slopes either by including a dark halo in your modeling or by using models characterized by tangential pressure anisotropy. This is the so-called anisotropy dark matter degeneracy that Tommaso and Leon have resolved in a number of distant cases. In practice, if you believe this physical picture, you can include a dark halo in a collisionless fashion. And it is amazing, and the word amazing is sometimes translated into there is a conspiracy, that you build two component fully self-consistent models, and you are able to raise your expectations here in metaphorical and non-metaphorical sense for sigma without spoiling the Aaron-Quater law. That is, the argument by Tonry is in a sort sense sketchy, that is, without referring to self-consistency. He uses the possibility of adding a dark halo, forgetting about the whole system, how it stays together. It can be proved in this physical picture that indeed you have two component models where the luminous component is not touched by the presence of the dark halo in terms of its density distribution. That comes out to be Aaron-Quater, starting from F and not imposing it a priori. And then you can also have leverage on sigma. And the recipe would be, the recipe is basically incorporating what Tommaso was showing first day or second day, saying there is the dark halo that is diffuse and the R1 quarter luminous component that is concentrated. If you argue about this and you work with the Jeans equations here, item 4, you would see that M dark divided by M luminous at RE is approximately 3.5 sigma square RE sigma square at 0 minus 1. That is the drop in velocity dispersion expected for zero dark matter is 1 over square root of 3.5. Please write me immediately if you know of a galaxy that has a faster drop, because I would be extremely interested to know. Galaxies apparently only have smaller drops. And to me, this is interpretation that we are not playing games with orbits, with star orbits. It's the halo that's coming in the business, and it can only lower the slope. And using this argument, in 1992, 1993, 1994, there was an ESO-key project devoted to this. We came out with the measurements of dark halos around ellipticals on the famous ones, 4472, 4636, well, I have a list. I went over time.
What's the next?
I list the other topics without saying a single word. The 12th point is the discussion point of what is it? Thursday, no, well, Friday, I think. 12. So the last point is rather a question rather than a topic by itself. We don't have much to say. But of course, from here on, there will be so many things, especially, for example, the fundamental plane and so on, that all belong to, and they are all intertwined with the dynamics of elliptical galaxies to some extent.
We should ask the audience whether they want to listen to all this, or whether we should maybe follow up.
I mean, I'm here on vacation, so.
Maybe the best thing is, these are sort of fun topics and closer to research.
Yeah.
So.
Because here, I mean, this I could not skip because it's a part of the tutorial, so I
We can convene again, maybe the next days.
Maybe half an hour.
Maybe half an hour,
because I don't want to say too many things either on that. Just stay in the same level, just make a statement or two for the chapter.
We can be. Can I make a conceptual point?
Yeah.
Because it came out several times. It's sort of characterized by you writing the spherical dreams theorem, and then you were saying that the plasma physicists prefer distribution function for origin models, and culminating and we're stuck with shapes. I think this has an underlying conceptual point, namely that for a non-spherical system, the integrals of motion that exist in this system simply do not exist. And that's the mathematical theorem. In almost all cases, they don't exist.
Yeah.
Therefore, you can't, first of all, you can't write the distribution function.
Yeah.
Secondly, you can't follow the plasma physicist approach.
Yes.
And thirdly, when you want to make progress on a fractal shape, you can't do it this way. You have to do it differently.
Yeah.
And the way to do it is via Schwarz's approach. And the underlying concept of this is that if your system is nearly integrable, which Lippmann galaxies almost always are, then you know that almost all of the orbits move on orbital tori
yeah.
in your phase space, and only in small regions between the tori these integrals don't exist, but very often they're confined.
Yeah.
Now the problem is that these tori are very close together in phase space with regions where the integrals don't exist in code. So you can't write them as continuous functions. So what you can do is you can build your distribution function as a function of orbits, and then all the consequences that from Jean's theorem follow also, the distribution function will then be constant in the same potential along
yeah.
the orbits in phase space. So when you build it this way, first of all, you circumvent the problem, and secondly, you can make progress on the state.
Yeah.
The only thing you can't do is write it up randomly. So that's why computers are great.
Yes, but I have objections. That is, can you really show me something that has the hour quarter profile and is triaxial and has pattern rotation, for example?
We can make these systems.
You can make them, yes, but...
Schwarz, you managed to do this without the hour quarter bit,
I guess. Yeah,
but he certainly managed to patch together slowly patterned rotation.
You can also make them from here using the same concept, basically. That is, you do something that is non-spherical, you follow the same physical prescription, then you initialize the embodied simulation. Initially, all the cell consistency is not there, then the system stabilizes. But I think there is a conceptual problem, because it's not a routine matter of staying close to, as you described, close to the integrals of the motion, because you run out of the integrals of the motion. So this beginning is not too easy to perform. The structure of orbits, I was talking to Massimo Schiavelli, has been involved with this for decades. And we got stuck. We tried again 2 years ago with the idea of finding integrals in such a way that you could go into the building of cusps, let's say, in a stellar distribution function. It's not...
The integrals, they don't exist, but the orbital tori exists.
I mean, we have to...
Small chaotic region, but most of the phase space is still regular. When things go wrong, when you have a black hole sometimes, then you can have nice chaotic regions. But even then, you can make progress. Only you must then abandon the idea of integrals. You have to then fill the chaotic part of your phase space in some different way. Some people call it building blocks, chaotic building blocks. Now that's also an approximation, because in reality the chaotic phase space isn't ergodic necessarily.
But do you have solutions for with a pattern rotation? Do you have solutions with a pattern rotation that you are really confident about?
Maybe recently.
Because What happens if you have pattern rotation, you just have the Jacobi integral. And the discussion of the tori and all the properties of orbits is really a mess. It's really a mess.
One of the things I did for my thesis was actually constructing a bar model for the Milky Way where the triaxiality and pattern rotation can come together.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
not using the tori approach here.
Yes, yes, I know, because I've been working on spiral structure for years, so I'm aware that. Yeah. But the conceptually, I think there is it's not something where you learn a lot. But you will describe probably your point of view later.
Could I suggest adding one more thing? Triaxiality?
Yeah. Yeah, also because 17 in Italy is a bad number, so.
Can I just make a quick matter of that same room? So 2 o'clock tomorrow outside of the course, there will be a brief discussion group on using gravitational telescopes to find sources of first light in the universe and the sources responsible for reionization. So if people fancy helping to end the dark ages, please come on.
Can we do it in a different part?